founder of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, an organization that is helping 150,000 men and women throughout the world to achieve continuing sobriety.
Founded 21 years ago, the one purpose, the one objective of AA is to help alcoholics recover from their illness. Bill, welcome to Weekday, and tell us first of all, if you will, sir, what kind of a problem specifically is alcoholism?
First, let me thank you deeply for having our sayings on the air. Well, it's certainly a public problem. There's supposed to be about 4 million alcoholics in the country. If you know a drinker, you certainly know it's a social problem. In the early days, the doctors used to feel that there was nothing inherited. Certainly, you don't inherit a craving for grog. We do notice in AA, though, that certain families have a great many alcoholics. And it has been suggested that very likely they get emotionally bummed up and made neurotic and therefore laid wide open to alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it is strictly inherited, it's more of an environmental
thing. Of course, you see the parents drinking a lot and people around the home, and you fall into the habit and may not have the capacity for evaluation.
But if you think that somebody in a family where one somebody older is an alcoholic, the youngster would see the bad effect of the alcohol and thus stay away from it.
You're exactly right. They often do. They go to an extreme of great hatred of drinking of all sorts on the one side, or later they themselves fall victim. It usually runs to extremes. They're either reformed or drunk.
Don't you think, Bill, that in the most instances, it's a case of someone having a great disappointment or a circumstance that forces them into this?
Well, in my own case, there was childhood inferiority. I was big, gawky. Kids could push me around in quarrels. And that developed a tremendous power drive to be a number one chap. You see, I had to be leader of everything. And then when frustrated, I would become depressed. And that pattern in me developed before there was any alcoholism. Well, then, I found that on my first drink, indeed, during World War One, that it cured the social inferiority. People drew near to me, I drew near to them. It was a solvent. It wasn't just a mere relaxation. I had begun to try to cure what you might say is a neurotic pattern. And that is the case with a great many alcoholics, but generalization is dangerous. Some alcoholics are simple addicts, and there are a great many types. And as I say, this is for the doctors rather than for AAs. I can only speculate a little on my own case.
Now, my understanding is that when you go to a party, for instance, you can never have just one drink, you yourself, or alcoholic generally.
No, no more than a diabetic can have one spoon of sugar. And probably he's a lot more sane about sugar than we are about alcohol, because we not only have the physical sensitivity, there is this terrible obsession or drive to drink, which has to be released. And if you take one drink, it triggers the whole business.
You know, Bill, it's a funny thing how you acquire a pattern. Now, I had a similar experience as a youngster, but I saw someone, a very beautiful woman, get drunk when I was a child. And you know, I have never had a drink. And my problem with going to parties and with people who do drink, and I have my own little beverage called Water on the Rocks, which I take. But perhaps my resentment is, as you say, as radical as the person who overdrinks.
Now, just a second. What do you mean you've never had a drink? We have a champagne party right here in
Listen to me. I'm nailed to the clock. So my I had one thimbleful of champagne and
she was flying.
flying out to get rid of it.
How, Bill, can you get a person to face up to the fact that he is an alcoholic?
In the early days of AA, they only faced up because they laid on their backs and couldn't move. And it was do or die. In that period, we dealt with last gasp cases only. But in recent years, more and more people are recognizing that they have this symptom, this compulsion to drink when they shouldn't be drinking, this terrible hangover business. And it's just as though you went to your doctor came to you and said, I don't like the looks of this store. He takes a culture and he says, well, it's very small, but it's very malignant, it's cancer. You see? So, likewise, a lot of people are recognizing these symptoms, and they're coming in much earlier. We're getting a lot of young people. We're getting a lot of people not in any great trouble.
Yes. What is an alcoholic? How do you know if you are an alcoholic?
Well, I would say that the easiest definition hangs around the word control. If when you should control your drinking, and you wish to control it, and you still do not, that is one of the great warning symptoms. It is this compulsive desire to drink against your will and against your interest. If I go to a Legion convention where everybody was supposed to sit tight, and I get tired, it's meaningless. On the other hand, if I got a business appointment and I don't need it because I'm tired, or I come in there and ball it up, I may be still a long way from the poorhouse. I may not have been in the hospital yet. The family may still be together. But that's the telltale thing. This lack of control when there should be control. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to control and it won't.
When one drink is too much and 14 isn't enough,
that's
huh?
about the story.
Now, what in the area of activities with AA, how many cures would you say have been affected,
Well, I'll correct you. There are recoveries,
that's
but
true.
We think that we have 150,000 easily. The movement is spread now into 70 countries and U.S. possessions. And it goes on pyramiding. We're in a tremendous period of growth just now. One alcoholic carrying the message to another.
Of course, you're not an organization in the full sense of the word, and how does a family reach you? Let's say that somebody wants to discuss a problem with a member of their family who, by the way, is not receptive to AA. Now, this, to me, is the big problem of getting the offender to a meeting because they have to come voluntarily, don't they?
Well, nowadays, doctors and clergymen both are very, very helpful in laying the groundwork for AA.
Mm-hmm.
They can raise the bottom and hit the champ with it. And it's best to try the doctor first. If the doctor will say, look, you have the symptoms of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to force you in a way. We know that that's no way. But why don't you go and inform yourself more about this? Go to an AA meeting. Sometimes literature falls into their hands or it can be left around. But you cannot force people, as a general thing, into AA. They have to be attracted to it somehow, and they have to go strictly in their own interest.
Mm-hmm. And your plan is a 24-hour plan, as I understand it. I shouldn't say the entire plan is, but would you explain the 24-hour plan?
Well, that's one of our cliches, which is becoming notable. It simply means that emotionally, we do not live in the past or in the future. We try to live for today.
Get through the next 24 hours.
Let's go mm-hmm. through the next 24 hours without a drink, and that is the springboard that most people take off from at the very beginning until they have a basic fundamental release so that the problem becomes non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
They go on this 24-hour basis. And the intimation is that we must morbidly dwell on the past, but daydream about the future.
That's right.
Let's live one day at a time.
I wonder if you would be kind enough to repeat for us the serenity prayer used by AA, Bill.
God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Isn't that wonderful?
Sure is, not just for AA. God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change. Courage to change the things that we can and the wisdom to know the difference.
I think the description of the prayer, as Bill said before, is that it's like a tent. It encompasses and covers all of us.
Thank you so much, Bill, for being with us.
Again, our great thanks to you people.
And God bless you in your work.
Tomorrow we start a new guest book series on higher education in America. Our guest at that time is going to be Dr. Eugene Austin, who's the president of Colby Junior College up in New London, New Hampshire.